Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vansir, Ruven Hoffman, Bari Hoffman, Harav Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, there were two questions from our great JTFers this week about the upcoming Israeli elections that were just announced, so I'm going to answer those questions in the opening because they match what I wanted to speak about in the opening. So let me answer those questions right now. First of all, let me read those questions to you. The first question is from the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Comments on Israeli elections. Realistically, what is the better and which is the worst outcome given the current candidates and parties?" Unquote. And we have a second question on the elections from the great Dr. Dan, who writes, and I quote, "One, convince Israelis Bennett is one of the worst," unquote. Okay, so let's answer those two questions and let's discuss the upcoming Israeli elections that were just announced this week. First of all, the Likud primaries. The primaries for the Likud party are going to be held on January 6th, less than 1 month from today, January 6th. And the general election for all the Knesset members and all the parties, the big general election is going to be held on March 7th, which is about 4 months from now. So in the next few months, we're going to be deciding once again who the leaders of Israel are, who the representatives of Israel are in the Knesset, who the prime minister is, the cabinet, and so on and so forth. I have to say from the start something that I think people who listen to this program for years already know. All of the candidates and all of the parties are terrible. The choices that the Israeli electorate is going to have are all absolutely terrible. People are not telling the truth to the Jewish people, and Israel is being exposed to tremendous danger. Let's start off with the incumbent Prime Minister, Bibi Netanyahu, Benjamin Bibi Netanyahu. There are two policies in particular that he has been responsible for that are the most serious threats to Israel's survival. And he is a catastrophe on both policies. The first is Iran. Over and over again, Netanyahu and other Israeli leaders tell us that if Iran goes nuclear, it's going to mean real danger and the real threat of a nuclear holocaust, that Iran could possibly use those nuclear bombs or share them with terrorist organizations. So there's a real danger of nuclear holocaust if, God forbid, Iran goes nuclear. And for a tiny state like Israel, a nuclear holocaust is unthinkable. It would be an unbelievable, unmitigated disaster. And yet Netanyahu is failing to do what a real Jewish leader would do. Israel has the military capability to destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program now. Israel can destroy enough of that program to set them back for 5 or 10 years. For the next 5 or 10 years, they'd be set back on that program if the Israeli Air Force went in and really did a thorough bombing job in all of the nuclear sites that we know about. And yes, some of them are underground. Even those are not invincible. Even those there can be tremendous damage done even to the ones that are underground. The Israeli Air Force and the Israeli military has the capability. They have the capability of doing that. Netanyahu himself has said that Israel militarily can destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program, or at least set it back 5 or 10 years. The defense minister of Israel, Moshe Yaalon, has said that Israel has the capability. The former defense minister, Ehud Barak, said that Israel has the capability if Israel wants to do it. Ehud Smolmert, who was the former left-wing prime minister, said that Israel could do it if she wants to. And Netanyahu wants to do it. He wants to send in the Israeli Air Force and wants to destroy this threat. He really would like to do it. So why isn't he doing it? Why is he exposing the people of Israel to nuclear to a threat of a nuclear holocaust? And it's not just the threat of a nuclear holocaust from Iran. If Iran gets nuclear weapons, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Syria, Egypt have already announced that they're going to begin a nuclear arms program, a program to develop nuclear weapons. And so you're going to see this spread like a cancer to possibly dozens of Muslim countries all surrounding Israel. If that happens, if dozens of Muslim countries have nuclear bombs, I could tell you there is no doubt that eventually they're going to get into the hands of Muslim terrorists. They're going to share them with Muslim terrorists. Someone is going to share them with Muslim terrorists, and there's going to be some sort of nuclear exchange. and is going to, and when I say nuclear exchange, I mean nuclear war. It'll lead eventually to some sort of nuclear war, God forbid. And so we're going to see the beginning of a massive nuclear arms race throughout the Muslim world, a completely uncontrollable nuclear arms race, and we're going to see the real possibility of a nuclear holocaust. And Netanyahu and Israeli leaders who have said that they could stop this right now militarily won't do it. Why? Because Barack Hussein, Obama, and John Kerry are telling them, we don't want you to do it. We have negotiations. We don't want you to disrupt our negotiations. The negotiations, of course, are a farce to cover for Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. And so in order not to upset Obama and Kerry, they are exposing Netanyahu and the Likud leadership and the government are exposing the people of Israel to the prospect of a nuclear holocaust. In order not to upset Obama, they're risking the lives of millions of Israeli Jewish men, women, and children. It's just madness beyond belief. You couldn't get a worse example of the type of insanity that we have in Israel today and among the Jewish leaders and the Jewish people today. You couldn't get a better example of that. And that is what Netanyahu's doing on Iran. And the second issue is creating a so-called Palestinian state. Of course, there is no Palestine. There are no Palestinians. Netanyahu has said that he's willing to create a so-called Palestinian state, even though he himself in the past said that this would be national suicide for Israel. Even left-wing Israeli leaders like Golda Meir and Abba Ibn and David Ben-Gurion said that there is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians, and creating such a state would be national suicide for Israel. And yet now Netanyahu says he's in favor of creating such a state. And he is creating that state. There are no negotiations currently taking place. They don't have to be. On the ground, he is creating a so-called Palestinian state right now. Do you know that under his government, the government that he and Naftali Bennett and Moshe Yaalon and Avigdor Lieberman have been leading, do you know that 17,000 Arab homes have been approved for building in Judea and Samaria? 17,000 Arab homes, and I'm just talking about the legal building, 17,000 homes. Considering the size of Arab families, do you realize what that is? Do you realize how many additional Arabs, Arab families, and the threat of Arabs are being placed in key strategic areas of Judea and Samaria to ensure that they will have a contiguous Palestinian state, God forbid? And while 17,000 Arab homes have been approved, no homes are approved for Jews, for Jewish building. There's a complete freeze on Jewish building, even though Netanyahu, he claims there is no freeze, but on the ground there's an absolute freeze going on. Absolute freeze. There are 31, just in Section C of Judea and Samaria, which is the key section that would connect Jerusalem to the various Jewish settlements or to the Arab towns and villages in Judea and Samaria. Section C is a key part of Judea and Samaria that will determine whether or not you'll have a contiguous Palestinian state or not. So Section C is very important. Do you know that the Netanyahu-Bennett government has approved 31 building projects for the Arabs in Section C? 31 major building projects, in addition to the 17,000 homes that already have been built or are being built right now. In addition to those 17,000, there are 31 building projects going on just in Section C, 31 Arab building projects, zero Jewish building projects, not one. So they're already betraying the Jewish people and creating a so-called Palestinian state. Why? Because Obama and Kerry told them, we don't want any Jewish building in Judea and Samaria. And by the way, not just in Judea and Samaria, also in Jerusalem, in Eastern Jerusalem, which East Jerusalem is supposed to be the capital, God forbid, of the so-called Palestinian state. And there is no Jewish building. There's a freeze on Jewish building in East Jerusalem going on now. Whereas the Arabs are building like crazy all over Jerusalem and all over the land of Israel. And I'm just talking, by the way, when I say they approve 17,000 Arab homes in Judea and Samaria, and they have 31 building projects, that's the legal stuff the Arabs are doing that have been approved. Illegally, they're doing even more than that, and the Israeli government's not lifting a finger. So they are taking over. They're taking over the state of Israel. They're taking over the land of Israel. We're losing. We're losing the Jewish state. That is Netanyahu and the Likud. They are the most catastrophic leaders possible. Now, we have other people that may want to challenge Netanyahu in the Likud primary, like Gidon Sa'ar. Gidon Sa'ar, who was the interior minister, is saying that he may challenge Netanyahu. I don't know if he's going to. We're going to find out in the next few days whether or not he actually does it. He has a deadline because the primaries on January 6th, the primary is actually less than a month from now, so he only has a few days to decide whether or not he wants to do it. He is collecting petitions and signatures to do it just in case he wants to make the move. But Gideon Sa'ar is even worse than Netanyahu. Gideon Sa'ar granted amnesty to illegal aliens as interior minister. He did what Obama's doing here with the illegal aliens. In Israel, not only do we have millions of Arabs taking over Israel, the traitors who run Israel are also inviting black African Muslims and other third world people to come flooding into Israel. They're now more than 70% of the population in South Tel Aviv, for instance, Israel's biggest city. They're also taking over. In certain parts, the Arabs are taking over, and then the other sections where the Arabs haven't taken over yet, they're letting the third world illegal aliens from Africa and other third world countries take over. I mean, if Hitler or Arafat were running the Israeli government, it would be hard for them to do a better job than the Israeli leaders that we have now. They are destroying the state from within. Just destroying it from within. That's the type of leaders we have. Gideon Sa'ar legalized the children of the illegal aliens. Now, of course, if the children are legalized, who's gonna deport the parents when their children, their little children, their minors are allowed to stay and are now Israeli citizens and are legal or have been legalized? Gideon Sa'ar says, give all their children citizenship and let them stay in Israel. I mean, can you imagine? Do you think the Israeli government that doesn't have the stomach to defend Israel against an Iranian nuclear holocaust is going to separate parents from 8 and 10-year-old kids? Obviously, if you legalize the children, that's the back door way. That's really the sneaky, evil way of legalizing all of them. That's Gideon Sa'ar when he was interior minister. And by the way, the same Gideon Sa'ar that did that, when he was interior minister, Moshe Feiglin, who is probably the only honest member of the Knesset, he's the one guy in the Knesset who I think is honest, Moshe Feiglin tried to help me and went to Gideon Sa'ar and said to him, please let him in, and gave him a letter from me asking that I be admitted in. Gideon Sa'ar refused to let me in. So in other words, illegal African, Muslim, Jew-hating aliens and criminals from all over the third world who illegally sneak into the country, Gideon Sa'ar legalizes them. But I was not allowed into the land of Israel by this evil swine. Now, that's Gideon Sa'ar. And by the way, I haven't even started to tell you all the other things he does. He was also education minister in the prior government. As education minister, he introduced homosexual propaganda in Israeli schools to teach little Israeli school children about how wonderful it is to be homosexual. He introduced this homosexual propaganda program in the Israeli schools, the Rainbow Program. And he goes and marches and speeches and speaks at all the gay parades and demonstrations that desecrate the Holy Land. God does not want this abominable filth in the Holy Land of Israel. He doesn't want it anywhere, but especially in his Holy Land. And Gideon Sa'ar goes and speaks there and makes militant speeches about how he supports the gay rights and the rights of gays. He also supported, by the way, Gideon Sa'ar also supported Netanyahu's freeze on Jewish building in Judea and Samaria and Jerusalem. And when Netanyahu released thousands of convicted Arab terrorist murderers who slaughtered Jewish men, women, and children, he released thousands of them when Netanyahu did this criminal act. Gideon Sa'ar supported it. Not only did he support it, he threatened those who voted against it. He said, if you vote against it, you have no right to be part of this government. You either support us when we want to release the thousands of terrorists or get out of the government. You have no right to be part of the government if you don't want to release the Arab terrorists. In other words, he wants to release Arab terrorists who have slaughtered Jewish men, women, and children. But Chaim ben Pesach, he bars from coming into Israel. He wants to legalize all the illegal aliens who sneak into Israel from Africa, but Chaim ben Pesach is barred from coming into Israel. He likes gay. In other words, the Israel of Gideon Sa'ar is an Israel of illegal aliens from Africa, Arab terrorists who've been freed, gays marching around in Tel Aviv, men with breasts who've had sex change operations. Those are the people Gideon Sa'ar wants to be the future of Israel. That's the future of Israel. And he wants to teach our children in schools that this is wonderful and this is normal. But Chaim ben Pesach is not allowed into Israel. You think he'd be a good prime minister with that history? So he's thinking of running against Netanyahu. Another one, Dani Danon, is thinking of running. Another phony. Complete phony. Opportunist, a phony. He's against, he claims to be on the right, Dani Danon. In the meantime, he keeps voting for and supporting Netanyahu's regime. Moshe Feiglin is the one guy who will be challenging Netanyahu in the primary. He's the one. If I were in the Likud, I would vote for Moshe Feiglin because I think he would certainly be better than what we have now. I would vote for Moshe Feiglin. Now, I have differences with Moshe Feiglin too. He is not a Kahanist, and I have differences with him. Okay, he's supported things that I don't agree with, but he has courageously demanded that Jews be allowed to pray on the Temple Mount. He's led that campaign. And he has said that the Arabs should be offered money to leave the land of Israel, that we should offer the Arab $50,000 to every Arab family to leave. I don't know if I'd be that generous, but that he has proposed that, and that is a Kahanist idea. He has fought to get me into Israel. He's the one guy who really has tried to get me into Israel, has really pushed to try to get me into Israel. He has tried to help me. And so, I mean, on a number of fronts, this guy, he's an honest guy. I really believe he's honest. Do I think he has a chance of winning the primary and becoming prime minister? I don't think he has any chance. I don't think he has a chance of winning. Because I think the people who vote in the primary are patronage-interested, corrupt people, basically. And I think it's basically rigged. The majority of people voting in the primary are only interested in what job they can get and what benefit the party can do for them and Netanyahu can do for them, they're not going to vote for an honest guy like Feiglin. I don't think he can win. But I would still vote for him at least as a protest vote, because at least he's honest and the others running against him are not. So that's where we stand as far as Likud and the Likud primary. Now, Dr. Dan has asked about Naftali Bennett, because according to the polls, Habayat HaYehudi, the Jewish Home Party, is doing very well in the polls because the Israeli people are hungry, are desperate for true right-wing strong leadership, which they're not going to get from any of the people running, but that's what they're hungry for. You can imagine if we had a decent budget and I were in Israel, you can imagine how well we could do. I mean, we would literally threaten to topple all of them if that were the case. But anyway, Naftali Bennett from the Jewish Home Party, he's also running. What an absolute fake, phony fraud. That's all I could say about him, is that he is a complete fake, phony fraud. This is the guy who told us just about a week ago that 99.9% of the Arabs in the land of Israel are loyal to Israel, support Israel. 99.9%, he said, no less. He's also sat silently in the government, and he had the power to bring down the government. He and Uri Ariel have been sitting there quietly while this building freeze has been going on, while the Arabs are building all over the place, and we're losing the whole land. We're losing our homeland. And the Jews are not allowed to build. And he sat there and accepted it. Iran is going nuclear, God forbid. Nothing's being done. He's sitting in the government and accepting it and doing nothing about it. And he has openly said as part of his platform that he supports surrendering at least 50% of Judea and Samaria to the Arab Muslim Nazis. He wants to give the Arab Muslim Nazi terrorists at least 50% of Judea and Samaria. And when they start with 50%, you know that's not going to be just 50%. You know they're going to pressure him and he's going to end up giving them the whole thing, God forbid. He also says that we should make tens of thousands of additional Arabs Israeli citizens. We don't have enough Arabs who are Israeli citizens now and voting for Knesset members, for Arab Knesset members who call for terrorism and destroying Israel. We don't have enough of that. We need to make more of the Arabs Israeli citizens. He advocates making tens of thousands of additional Arabs Israeli citizens. And his party, and Uri Ariel, who is the housing minister from his party, they're giving the whole Negev over to the Bedouin. The Negev is like half of pre-67 Israel. They're handing the whole thing over to the Bedouin Muslims. They want to build massive housing for the Bedouin Muslims, new communities, new settlements, giant new housing for the Bedouin Muslims. Of course, building nothing for the Jews. So I mean, it just, you can't get worse than this. This is just such a complete phony, and yet he comes across as this right winger. He's supposed to be a right winger. He's such a fake, phony fraud. I remember the last time he was running, he made a big deal about saying that he would not obey orders to expel Jews from their homes, he said on a show, and a lot of Israelis really admired him when he said that. He was going to get a lot of support from the right when he said that. When he said he would not obey orders to expel Jews, but the media didn't like him, the media started criticizing him, he immediately backed down and said, no, he would obey orders because you have to obey orders. You know, he backed down right away. He always backs down in the end, just like Netanyahu and Sharon and Begin and all these other people on the phony right. In the end, they talk tough, and in the end, they give in even more than the left. So he's a disaster. All of them are disastrous. I could go through all the other parties, but I hope you get the idea. They're all absolutely disastrous. If you want the whole truth, if you want someone who really will tell the truth and not give in, and really, really run Israel the way a Jewish state should be run, and really make us proud as a people, and make our also our wonderful righteous Gentile supporters proud, that would be us. We would be the ones who would, we're the only ones who would really do that type of job. But we're not running right now. We're not running in the March 7th election. I would vote for Moshe Feiglin in the Likud primary. He's not going to be running, though, in the general election. He's going to be running within the framework of the Likud, and I would not support the Likud in the general election. So in the general election, I don't really like anybody. I think they're all bad. Within the primary on January 6th, I would vote for Moshe Feiglin. But again, he's going to be part of the Likud list if he gets in again. And so in the general election, I don't see anybody right now running that I think is worthy of support. I just don't see it right now. But I'll tell you what I do see. I do see a lot of frustration, a lot of anger. I see a leadership vacuum in Israel. And I see, and we, there's no question, if we just were given a chance, we would have a tremendous opportunity to fill in that vacuum. The only problem is we don't have the funds we need. We could become a mass movement, by the way. They could not keep me out of Israel if we became a mass movement. They wouldn't be able to. They wouldn't be able to. Because the politicians would be afraid to go against the will of a mass movement. All the people in the mass movement would be writing and complaining and calling and having demonstrations. They wouldn't be able to keep me out because it's so unjust. The majority of Israelis would say, this is outrageous. You can't do this. And they would give in, just like they always give in to pressure. If we were a mass movement and we'd become a mass, if we had real funds, we'd be, as I've said many times, you give us a real budget, within 1 year, we're a mass movement. Within 1 year. And we proved it. We've proven it to you. We proved it with the over 27,000 people who we got as members on our Facebook page in 3 months before Facebook took us down because of complaints from the Israeli government and Israeli leaders. And the Likud all the Likudniks started complaining, and that's why they took us down. But anyway, we've already proven our potential. And so, true, we don't have an Adelson or some billionaire or some very wealthy person to give us the big money that we need. If there's someone listening to this program out there who has the ability to either give us the money or raise the big money we need, please contact us. We need your help badly. You can save the whole Jewish people. But until we find somebody like that, we need to do everything we can with what we have to wake up as many Jews as possible, because we're in a lot of trouble. We're in a lot of trouble. Israel's under tremendous pressure. It has weak, cowardly leaders that always cave in. We're in a lot of trouble. And we're the only ones telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And we need someone who tells the whole truth. So I urge you to do the following to help us. First of all, join and comment on our main sites. JTF.org is our main site in English. Hayamin.org is our main site in Hebrew. If you happen to speak Hebrew or if you're an Israeli, go to our main site in Hebrew, Hayamin.org. If not, go to JTF.org. Join. It takes a minute to join. It takes a couple of minutes to join. Join our main sites. You do have to register again and join. It just takes a couple of minutes. Join our main sites and comment on the main sites and vote in the polls and participate and help us publicize and publicize them everywhere. Help us publicize those main sites because they really are very high quality news sites. We have a lot to be proud of. Our news sites are excellent. Shlomo does an excellent job on the English site. And Rafo and the great Hebrew admins do a great job on the Hebrew site. So help us with that. And of course, if you see our videos in Hebrew and English, please obviously like them and promote them as well. So help us, promote us, promote our main pages. That's very, very important. And of course, every check, every money order, every cash donation makes a big difference. The more support we get, the more people we can reach with the truth. We've got to build a movement. We've got to reach people with the truth before it's too late. We've got to do that. We're the only ones telling the truth. You know that. You great JTFers know that. You've seen how what we've said over the years has come true over and over again. So please help us generously with checks, money orders, cash donations, which can be sent to our post office box through the regular mail, or if you prefer for convenience sake to do it online, you can do it with your credit card, through PayPal, and all you have to do is go to our main Hebrew page, hayamin.org, on our main Hebrew page. It's in English. There's a donate button on top in English, a donate button on hayamin.org on top, and you can donate conveniently with your credit card to our organization. Again, it only takes a couple of minutes, and it's very convenient. Okay, so that's where we stand right now. I believe that we have the potential to influence events if we reach enough people. And if we all work together as a team, as I've said from the beginning, if we all work together as a team, the more work we do, the more time we invest, the more money we invest, the more we fight together to bring the truth to the people, the more influence and impact we're going to have for the better. Because Israel's in a lot of trouble right now. And if we want to save Israel, and if we want to save, and of course that affects what happens to America and the rest of the world also, obviously. If we want to save the situation, turn the situation around, we need to work together as a team. We need to do that. And we need to do that zealously. Okay, let's go to our questions now from our great JTFers this week. I know this was a long opening, but I think the election story is a pretty unique and important story. And we start out with the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, "Discuss e-cigarettes," unquote. Well, e-cigarettes are what the American Lung Association calls nicotine delivery devices. In other words, they directly deliver nicotine to you. And obviously that can't be good for you. The American Lung Association and other health groups are all vehemently against legalizing e-cigarettes. They think they should be made illegal because, you know, when something, all right, we can't outlaw tobacco products in this country because it's too late, unfortunately. The cat has been let out of the bag. You know, you can't completely outlaw tobacco products. You can do the things that have been done in many cities where you have to smoke outside and where you can't smoke in restaurants and you can't smoke indoors, which I think is very good and has saved a lot of lives. Even though there are dumb people on the so-called right, libertarians and others who say, "I want the right to smoke and kill myself everywhere." No. I think those laws were actually quite good. But the e-cigarettes is a new product, and they're using it to addict teenagers and kids. And I think, that when these health groups and the American Lung Association and others and the FDA and others say that they think that these things should be outlawed until we know the full effects, I agree with that. I mean, this is a matter of saving lives. Again, e-cigarettes directly deliver nicotine into your system. That's what e-cigarettes do. They're very, very dangerous. And it could be, and possibly even worse than regular cigarettes. Possibly. We don't know the full effects yet. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, "Might Gog be conservative," quote unquote. In other words, a phony conservative. Of course it's possible. Phony conservatives, leftists, in the end, they all do the horrible things that endanger the world. Gog is going to be the leader of Magog. Magog is going to be an empire in the end of days, a big superpower, world superpower, and that superpower is going to lead an international coalition against Israel and the Jews. And God is going to destroy all the people everyone involved in that is going to be destroyed by God. Anyone who goes against Israel and the Jews will be destroyed by God, completely destroyed in this world and in the next. And so, but Gog is going to be the leader. And Magog is going to be the empire, the superpower. And could it be a pseudo-conservative? Of course it could be. Sure it could be. By the way, in the end, they're going to lead a coalition of the Western nations and the Muslim world. They're going to gang up on Israel. But of course, God in the end, it says in the end that the Muslim nations are going to attack the Western nations. They're going to betray the Western nations and attack them, of course. So in the end, that's not going to work. That coalition is not going to work out very well, but they're going to try. They're going to try to lead an international coalition to destroy Israel. And Lewinsky Stinks now writes, and I quote, comment on China being the world's number one economy, unquote. It's disastrous. It's disastrous. Communist China now has a bigger economy than the United States. I mean, this was unthinkable years ago. Communist China was starving. You remember they were starving under Mao Zedong and the Cultural Revolution? Well, when I say remember, I mean, of course, people don't. This is going back to the 1960s when I was a kid. Most of our members weren't born at that time. But I remember in the 60s, I mean, tens of millions of Chinese died of starvation because of what they had. They had something called the Cultural Revolution where they tried to impose true communism in China, true communist economic principles, which led to mass starvation. I mean, communism is so unworkable and so insane. And that was under Chairman Mao Zedong. And since then, they've adopted, for survival's sake, they adopted capitalist principles, or at least capitalist principles to a certain degree, with slavery. They have millions of slaves in China working for nothing. And they've been able to develop a giant economic engine here, which not only competes with the United States, has overtaken the United States economically. It's very dangerous. Very, very dangerous for the future of the world. And remember, the Chinese have 1.5 billion people in their population. Plus the world's largest economy now, we're looking at a real threat here. And Lewinsky Stinks writes, and I quote, are Michael Brown mobs a paramilitary force, unquote. I wouldn't characterize them as a paramilitary force. I think they're mobs. A paramilitary force, of course, would mean that they're actually well-armed. And I haven't seen that yet. I'm not saying that it can't develop into something like that, but I haven't seen that. I think right now they're just crude, cruel mobs of evil, vicious people, and they're being used in order to tear American society apart and in order to make it so that black criminals, black murderers and black criminals will have a license to kill and be able to do anything they want, and the police will not be able to do anything in response. No one will be able to respond to them, not citizens, not police, not anyone. That's the goal of these vicious anarchists. And Rand Paul, by the way, he supports them. Now, Rand Paul went to Ferguson and then he met with Al Sharpton. He agrees 100% with these black racists. He's on their side on every issue. On every time there's an incident now, he supports. He goes to the NAACP. He's their best friend now, Rand Paul. He's an example, Lewinsky Stinks, of a so-called conservative who is, of course, anything but. Who's a complete fraud and a liar. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we go now to our great friend, Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, what is the purpose of pubic hair, unquote? Well, you know, when I was a kid, they used to say that it protects against friction and infections. But in fact, there's no evidence of that. We don't really know. Most experts would say they're not really sure exactly what function pubic hair plays. Obviously, it has a function. Everything in our body has some sort of function. I mean, everything we have has some sort of purpose. We're not really sure 100% what the purpose of pubic hair is right now. Most experts would say they're not really sure. They guess in certain areas, certain possibilities, but they're not really certain. So I think more research is going to be needed to determine what value that really has on the human body. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we go now to the great Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what is your opinion on the grand jury not indicting the police officer who shot and killed Michael Brown? Thanks, unquote. Thank God that the grand jury at least had enough common sense and enough courage to resist all the pressure, all the threats, all the intimidation, and do the right thing. That police officer was 100% justified. 100% justified. And the grand jury did the right thing. 100%. Thank you, Joe. And we go now to our great friend Aluf Abir, who writes, and I quote, "Do you think that the allegation made against Pope Pius VII of public silence and inaction about the fate of the Jews during World War II is justified?" Unquote. It's not just justified. The Pope and the Vatican actively assisted the Nazis during the Holocaust. They had diplomatic relations with the Nazis during the Holocaust right up until the last day of the war with Nazi Germany. That's the same Pope, the same Catholic Church that had no diplomatic relations with Israel until the Oslo surrender agreements. When Israel started committing suicide with Oslo, then they agreed to have diplomatic relations and only used those diplomatic relations to hurt Israel. But they refused to even diplomatically recognize Israel in any way until the Oslo agreements in the 1990s. For the first 50 years of Israel's existence, they wouldn't even recognize the existence of Israel. They wouldn't even pretend to recognize Israel's existence. Now they're just pretending. But Nazi Germany, right away they had diplomatic relations with Nazi Germany and continued to have diplomatic relations with Nazi Germany right up until the last day of the war, even when the Allies had liberated the Vatican and had liberated all of Italy and they had nothing to fear. They continued to have diplomatic relations with Nazi Germany up until the very last day of the war. And they had tremendous influence on what happened during the Holocaust. One third of Germany was Catholic. And the parts of Germany that supported Hitler most fervently before he came to power, Bavaria and the southern part of Germany, that area is overwhelmingly Catholic. Almost all of Austria, which of course fanatically supported the Nazis, almost all of Austria is Catholic. Almost all of Poland, which murdered millions of Jews. They joined with the Germans in helping them murder millions of Jews in Poland. Auschwitz and the concentration camps, the death camps were the reason they located them in Poland is because they knew the Poles would be thrilled with being able to murder the Jews. Poland is almost entirely Catholic. And there are many Catholics in countries like Hungary and the Ukraine where also the Hungarians, Ukrainians also supported the Nazis and murdered hundreds of thousands of Jews. Almost all of Croatia is Catholic. And the Croatians, of course, also were fanatic participants in the Nazi war crimes. They supported the Nazis and murdered huge numbers of Jews and huge numbers of Serbs. The worst Nazi crimes were committed by Catholics. The worst Nazi war criminals were Catholics. And the Catholic Church never excommunicated Adolf Hitler. You know, the Catholic Church, what happens when a baby is born, you know, eventually they have what they call the baptism, you know, and there are baptismal records when a baby is baptized and children are baptized and they become part of the Catholic Church. They go into the baptismal records of the Vatican. And when the Vatican doesn't like something that a Catholic does, they excommunicate them. They say, "We're taking you out of our baptismal records. You're no longer baptized. You're no longer a Catholic. You're excommunicated." And they've done that to many Catholics who in any way slightly criticized the Pope or disagreed with the Pope or disagree with church doctrine, they've been excommunicated. Those Catholics were excommunicated and taken out and cursed by the church. But Adolf Hitler, to this day, has never been excommunicated by the Catholic Church. He's still a Catholic in good standing in the baptismal records of the Vatican. Isn't that interesting? And of course, the Catholic Church is always anti-Israel. The Catholic Church had the doctrine of the wandering Jew. Do people know what the doctrine of the wandering Jew is? The Pope came up with the concept of the doctrine of the wandering Jew, where the Jew will always wander and never return to his land. This was many, many centuries ago. The Church said, the doctrine of the wandering Jew, the Jew is going to be punished because he refused to convert to Catholicism. So the Jew is doomed, he's cursed, he's going to be punished, and he will never return to his homeland, never have an independent state again, never have a state, an army, never return to the land of Israel. That's what the Catholic Church said, and he said it when he was on doctrinal matters. He's supposed to be the vicar of Christ, so the credibility of Catholicism stands or falls on whether or not that came true. So when the Jews did return, despite the fact that the Pope said they never would, and the doctrine of the wandering Jew, the Catholic doctrine of the wandering Jew said the Jews could never return, when the Jews did return, and they did redeem the land of Israel, and they did fulfill all the biblical prophecies, this was the worst theological slap in the face that the Vatican could ever experience. And so, as a result of that, that's one of the reasons why they so bitterly oppose the existence of Israel in a Jewish state. And of course, the Catholic Church, you know, aside from what they did in the Holocaust, the Catholic Church directly ordered inquisitions and crusades and pogroms against Jews. They ordered crusades against Jews where crusaders took their swords and cut babies out of pregnant women's stomachs and raped all the Jewish women in towns and villages and then cut their throats. I mean, unbelievable barbarism. And they were singing while they did it, "Christ, we adore thee." So that's the history. That's the history. And people now, to suck up, have been saying, "Oh no, you can't criticize what the Vatican did during the Holocaust." Criticize what they did in the Holocaust. If the Vatican were a moral institution, there never would have been a Holocaust. They could have prevented it. They had the power. They had the moral authority and the power to prevent something like that. And they didn't. And by the way, after the war, they helped thousands of the worst Nazi war criminals escape to South America, to Latin America. It was the Catholic Church that helped them do that. So, you be the judge based on everything we've just said. Thank you, Aluf Abir. And we go now to the great Ruby Stars, who writes, and I quote, "What are your thoughts on transhumanism, and do you think that custom designing a human body is against God's will?" Unquote. Of course it is. Of course it is. Transhumanism. You know, this is a typical atheist libertarian. It's atheist libertarian hogwash. That'll be the day when they can do this. That'll be the day. And of course, it's dangerous. The Nazis, this is what the Nazis sought to do. They thought they're going to perfect the human race with technology and with the various things they did. I mean, they immediately started murdering all of the crippled and the infirm and the mentally disabled and the elderly. Hitler called them useless eaters. He started slaughtering all of them. He murdered them. And this was how he prepared for the Holocaust against the Jews. This is true Nazi ideology. And the transhumanist, the people in the forefront of the transhumanist movement are atheist libertarian types, including, by the way, there's some self-hating Jews involved as well. And of course, you know, obviously it's against God's will. It's an abomination. It's a complete abomination. Thank you, Ruby Stars. And we go now to our great friend, Righteous Indian Gentile, who writes, and I quote, "If the Messiah returns, will stoning for adultery be reinstituted?" Unquote. All the laws of the Torah will be reinstituted, but you won't need to implement them. Because when you have the real fulfillment in the beginning, there'll still be sinful behavior. But when the Messianic era really takes hold, there won't be any more adultery. There won't be any more sin. People are not going to sin anymore. Now you might say, "What does that mean? We're going to lose our free will?" No, you're not going to. Nothing will actually happen to take your free will away, except for one thing. People who will still be in the world, which will be a minority, by the way, a small minority of the human race that makes it, but people who will still be in the world will actually meet God. And I put that in quotes, meet, because obviously God has no physical presence. He's only spiritual. So you can't actually see God. There's nothing physical to see, and no one could see God and live. But his manifestation, whether it's in a cloud or whether it's in a bright light or any of the other things that people who've had clinical death experiences have seen, people will actually appear before God and will have this unbelievable experience. And once you have this experience, you'll never want to sin again. Your whole life will just be devoted completely to God. Once you have this uplifting experience, which we can't understand because we're still in our bodies now in this world, but once you have this experience of being before the Creator of the universe, you will so love the Creator of the universe and be so grateful to the Creator of the universe, you'll be completely devoted to doing everything the Creator of the universe wants. That is the world that will eventually exist in the Messianic era. Thank you, righteous Indian Gentile. And we go now to the great Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, can you explain why all these white Uncle Toms are supporting the blacks on Michael Brown, unquote? Oh, of course, a Chicago Jew, because these are sick, self-hating people. There are a number of reasons. You have some who are just self-hating people, who just, they hate their parents, they hate the way they were brought up, so they're rebelling against their white background by supporting enemies of their white background. That's one group. Then you have others who just think it's cool to be black now. They've been brainwashed and they think it's cool. I mean, even though blacks, the majority of blacks have low IQs, are uneducated, come from the most primitive background, have no real history. But the Hollywood news media educational establishment criminals have convinced everybody and brainwashed everybody that they're the coolest people. They're the greatest people on the face of the earth. It's cool now to be black, and it's not cool to be white. So they want to be cool. They want to be in with the cool people. So you've got those types of people. And I mean, there are all types of insane psychological reasons for this lunacy. You have others who just want to destroy society. You have certain people, a lot of these self-hating whites, they're sinful, evil people. They don't want to have to live by moral laws or moral standards. They see that the blacks commit crime. They have rap and hip hop and other cultural things that go against any decency in society, and they like that. They want to have a society. They want to have a world where they can do anything they want. There are no rules, no limits. Everybody can go around anarchistically doing whatever they want, and they see supporting blacks as a way to achieve that, because of the way the blacks behave in Africa, because of the way the blacks behave in their own neighborhoods. So there are many psychological reasons for this, Chicago Jew. Is it sick? Of course it's sick. Is it evil? Of course it's evil. But this is the phenomenon that we have to fight against. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to the great Mensch, who writes, and I quote, one, Rafi Eitan, Pollard's handler, unquote. Yes, he this week came out with a statement saying that he has no regrets, that he did hand over Pollard and his wife to the FBI. They were in the Israeli embassy. The Israeli embassy could have guarded them, and there's nothing the FBI or anybody could have done. They could have avoided arrest, and they could have saved them, which is what they should have done, because what Pollard did was in the interests of America and Israel. He was a hero to both America and Israel, and a Kahanist Israeli government would have said that and would have refused to hand him over. But Rafi Eitan ordered the Israeli embassy to forcibly evict Pollard and his wife from the embassy, drag them out, and hand them over to the FBI. And he said this week he has no regrets. He's proud of what he did. This filthy cockroach, this Judenrat Kapo cockroach, is proud of what he did. It's like a Judenrat Kapo animal like Kastner saying that he's proud that he helped throw Jews in the ovens and gas chambers. That's the same mentality. I mean, such filth, such subhuman filth, who unfortunately is still alive. He's in his 80s and he's still alive, unfortunately. I don't know if he's in his 80s or he's 90. I don't know how old he is. May Hashem take him as quickly as possible. May he burn in hell forever. But anyway, this is the type of filth that the Israeli news media, they loved it. They thought, oh, this was a wonderful thing to say. The traitors in the Israeli news media. This is the type of filth that the destiny and future of the Jewish people were in the hands of this type of filth. Mensch now writes, and I quote, Yochanan Danino overstepping authority, unquote. Absolutely, Yochanan Danino is the head of the Israeli police, and he's suddenly issuing statements saying he doesn't like the fact that Jews are praying on the Temple Mount, on Har HaBayit. Jews should not be allowed to pray on Har HaBayit. And even members of the Israeli Knesset, Jewish members of the Knesset, like Moshe Feiglin, should not be allowed to go up and pray on Har HaBayit. Only Arabs are allowed to pray there. They have mosques there. They've taken over the holiest spot in the world for the Jews. Can you imagine if we built a huge synagogue in Mecca and Medina and said Arabs and Muslims are no longer allowed to pray there now? I mean, this is what these arrogant Muslim Nazis have done to us with the support of the Israeli government. And Yochanan Danino, the head of the Israeli police, who does everything he can to hire as many many Arabs as possible on his police force. His police force is loaded with Arab Jew haters. This beast is telling Jews, you're not allowed to pray on the Temple Mount. We don't want it. You're not allowed. I won't allow it. I don't want it. Of course he's overstepping his authority. He's a filthy traitor. And his police force is so corrupt and so cruel and so anti-Semitic and so disgusting. Manchnow writes, and I quote, three, did Jonathan Pollard shop, quote-unquote, other intelligence agencies, South Africa, Pakistan, Argentina, Iran, etc., unquote? Absolutely not. Complete smear. Complete smear. I forgot, you know, I even forgot the name of the animal from the New York Nazi Times who wrote the book against him. Wolf Blitzer also wrote a book against Pollard. Wolf Blitzer from CNN, another self-hating Jew. And the animal, I forgot his name, from the New York Nazi Times, this leftist scum, wrote this book against Pollard, smearing him, accusing him of everything under the sun. Just complete smear, complete lies. There's not a scintilla of truth to any of it. Jonathan Pollard is a hero. He tried to save America and Israel. The United States should have given all of the information that Pollard passed over to Israel. It was good for America and good for Israel that he passed the information over, and the United States was obligated under the U.S.-Israeli Strategic Alliance Agreement to give this information to Israel, and violated that Jew-hating Nazi pig, Caspar Weinberger, violated the written agreement with Israel. Pollard was just basically giving Israel what Israel was supposed to receive by written agreement. Israel was supposed to receive all this information anyway, and it was good for America and good for Israel that Israel received this information. Thank you, Mensch. And we go now to the great surgical Jew who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what is your opinion on Michael Freund and his organization, Shavei Yisrael? Thanks for your great answers as always, unquote. Oh, he's another disaster, as if we don't have enough. Michael Freund and his organization want every third world group that pretends to be Jewish to come in and say, oh, we're Jews too now. The worst third world people, it doesn't matter if they're in Africa or if they're on the sub-Asian continent or if they're in some far east country, you know, always the poorest people in the worst poverty, the most destitute people saying, oh, we're Jews too, let us go to Israel and cash in also so we can go on welfare in Israel. I mean, just unbelievable. Unbelievable. If we listen to this animal and his organization, Israel will be put out of business. It will be the end of the Jewish people within 1 year. Israel will be overrun by millions and millions of third world people pretending to be Jewish or claiming we're part of the 10 lost tribes or we're original Jews. Yeah, sure. I mean, what a sick, evil person. The Jewish people is not determined, first of all, by ancestry. First of all, most of these people have zero connection to the Jewish people, even physically, zero connection. It's all, they just make the whole thing up. It's all baloney. But even if there were some sort of connection in the distant past, after the intermarriage assimilation and giving up of Judaism for so many centuries, they're not Jews. You're not a Jew anymore when you do that. You have nothing to, if you had an ancestor 1,000 years ago or 500 years ago who was Jewish, that means you're a Jew. Judaism is based upon adherence to the Torah and having either a Jewish mother or conversion according to halakha. If you're not in that category, you're not a Jew. Thank you. But of course, these people don't even have that. They have zero connection. Zero connection. They're just making it up because Israel has become, thanks to the Soviet Jews who went to Israel and who turned Israel into a technological powerhouse, Israel has become a prosperous Western country. So they want to go there and cash in on that. They want to leave their third world hell holes and come to a prosperous Western country. And this piece of garbage wants to help them. Thank you, Surgical Jew. And we go now to our great friend Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, isn't it naive to support the Kurds against ISIS? After all, the Kurds are Muslims as well and share the same ideology as ISIS, unquote. Da Vinci, I'm so glad you're saying that, because that is so true. We should not interfere when Muslims kill Muslims. When Muslims are killing other Muslims, we should not interfere. If Muslims threaten us, then we should react and react ferociously and vigorously and wipe out anybody that threatens us. But when Muslims are involved in civil wars and are killing each other, It's none of our business. And we shouldn't support one side against the other. Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. ISIS is not the problem. Islam is the problem. Thank you, Da Vinci. Excellent point. And we go now to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, comment on verdict in Staten Island chokehold case, unquote. Well, I mean, the guy, it was a tragic case. The guy, of course, was heavily overweight, very obese, and had very serious health problems. He had a heart condition, diabetes, and very severe problems. And the police, they, you know, they don't know. I mean, he was a huge guy, very big. You see him. I mean, you see he's like twice the size of these cops that are trying to, you know, charge him with selling cigarettes illegally. And I agree. You know, whether you think that selling cigarettes illegally is an important charge, not important charge, that's not the point. The point is, he was physically, violently resisting arrest, and he was twice the size of these police officers. What are the police officers supposed to do when someone physically resists arrest? What are you supposed to do when he refuses to be arrested and physically resists? What are you supposed to do? So, I think the grand jury in Staten Island made the right decision. Dr. Dan now writes, 3, what is the funniest movie you ever saw? Unquote. Dr. Dan, you got me there. Because I haven't seen movies in many years. I don't watch movies. You know, I really don't watch. I almost never would watch movies. So I'm not really a good person. I'm not a good person to ask. It's difficult for me to answer that because I really don't see movies. Many, many years ago, the old movies, some of them were funny. I don't even remember which would be the funniest. So I'm not really the best person to ask that particular question. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Dan. And we move on now to our great friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, 1, please comment on these blacks. 1, Thurgood Marshall. Okay. Thurgood Marshall, of course, was a leftist NAACP lawyer. He argued a lot of the cases before the Supreme Court that had a very destructive effect. Those Supreme Court rulings had a very destructive effect upon America. He was also appointed by Lyndon Johnson to be a Supreme Court justice. All of his rulings on the Supreme Court and everything he did in his life was pro-criminal, supporting the most evil people in society just because they're black. He was an evil person. 2, Clarence Thomas. Binyamin Yisrael now asks about Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas is actually better than most whites. I think Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia are the two best members of the Supreme Court. Of course, by my standards, I'd be more right-wing than any of them, of course. But still, of all the people on the Supreme Court, even for decades now, Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia, in my opinion, are the two best. So Clarence Thomas is actually a pretty good black guy, comparatively speaking. And Binyamin writes, is Clarence Thomas a real conservative, unquote. Well, again, he's not conservative enough by my standards, but he's better than the others. He is better than the others. He's against affirmative action, for instance. He's against a lot of these things that, unfortunately, the pseudo-conservatives are all too willing to support. Binyamin now writes, 3, comment on Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is something that was invented by an American black in the 1960s, and it's an absurd holiday. They're trying to create a black holiday around the end of the year for blacks to celebrate something that's supposedly African in nature. It's not African. It was created by a black guy from Los Angeles. It's a ridiculous holiday that rips off symbols from the Jews and from Hanukkah and rips off other symbols from other people. It's like everything else that, you know, blacks imitate things that whites did and then try to take credit for it. It's nonsense. It's complete nonsense. It's primitive, nonsensical garbage put together by a black racist who hated white people, hated Jews, and he puts together, you know, this pseudo holiday and tries to make it some sort of great black invention. Thank you, Binyamin. And we go now to the great Guns N' Roses fan, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think about the Orthodox priest Gabriel Nadav, unquote. Gabriel Nadav is pro-Israel, and he is courageous. He's for real. I think this is someone in Israel, by the way, who's been threatened. His life has been threatened. His family's been threatened. But he really supports Israel. He says that the only place where Christians are safe is Israel, in the Middle East, the only country in the Middle East. And he is genuinely pro-Israel. He genuinely supports Israel and the Jews. Guns N' Roses fan now writes, and what is the difference between the Hadith and the Quran, unquote? Okay, good question. The Quran, of course, was supposed to be directly from Muhammad. Muhammad had somebody wrote it, because Muhammad couldn't write. He was completely illiterate. Muhammad did not know how to read or write anything. He was completely illiterate. Can you imagine the founder of their religion doesn't even know how to read and write? Is a complete, I mean, just an Arab illiterate moron? That's the founder of the Islamic religion. And the Muslims say, oh, this shows how brilliant he is. Look at this. He was able to give us this great book and he's completely illiterate. Oh, come on. That's why the book is such a disoriented, insane collection of lunacy. Because the person who did it was copying everything from the Jews, from the Christians, from everybody else. He just copied and stole all the stories and distorted all the stories and put a mishmash together. And he said, this is the Quran. But that's the Quran. Supposedly the word of Muhammad, the illiterate. The Hadith was written as the so-called prophetic traditions of Muhammad. Other people wrote the Hadith, and the Hadith is supposed to explain what are the prophetic traditions of Muhammad. So, you know, they're both part of the Islamic religion. By the way, there are Hadiths. The Sunnis have their Hadiths, and the Shias have their Hadiths. The Shi'im and the Sunnim, they all have their own Hadiths. It's a complete insane mishmash. Thank you, Guns N' Roses fan. And we go now to Tag Mechir Tzedek, who asks about this week's parasha, Parashat HaShavua. This week's parasha, this week's Torah portion is Parashat Vayishlach. Here Jacob, meets his evil twin brother Esav. How do you say Esav in English? Esau. He meets his evil twin brother Esau. And I was having a senior moment there. Anyway, Yaakov meets his evil twin brother Esav. Yaakov, of course, is the father of the Jews. And Esav is the father of nations that hate the Jews. You know, it says that Esav, it is a law that Esav hates Yaakov. I mean, that's what was written in the Talmud. Esav, the interesting thing about the meeting between Esav and Yaakov, there are many interesting aspects, but I just want to talk about one aspect that often is not mentioned or emphasized. Esav proposes to Yaakov that Yaakov and the Jews live together with him. Well, listen, why don't we live together? We're both wealthy, we both have a lot of cattle and we'll have land, and we can live very well. Why don't we live together? We were brothers and we can live together. So Esav wants to live together with Yaakov. And you know, we have a belief in Judaism that what happened to the fathers is a sign for the children. The sons are going to wind up doing what happened to the fathers. Whatever happened to our fathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, whatever happened to them eventually will also happen to the Jewish people, to their offspring, to the Jewish people. But anyway, Yaakov refuses the offer. He rejects the offer. He does it politely, but he rejects the offer. He says, you go your way, we go our way, and gives various reasons, but he rejects it. He refuses to live together with Esav. Esav makes him a very nice offer, and let's live together in peace and coexistence, and we can work together, and isn't this nice for peace, and it's humane, and it's enlightened. Yaakov rejects it. In Judaism, there is no coexistence with the evil. There's no assimilation, and there's no coexistence with evil nations. We are not to coexist, and we're not to assimilate. Lo, this is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. That was what was supposed to be a curse for the Jewish people. Bilam wanted to curse the Jewish people with that. But instead, God turned it into Israel's biggest blessing. When Israel is alone and isolated and can develop a truly Torah society, then Israel becomes a light unto the nations, and all the nations will see the good example set by Israel. The Jews can only set a good example when they're living in their holy land, and they're living in their state, and they're building their society according to the Torah. Then the nations will have an example set for them that will be beneficial to all decent and righteous people. That's one of the great lessons of this week's parasha. We do not coexist, and we do not live with Esav, and we do not live with our enemies, and we do not assimilate with nations of the world that do not have... We're not supposed to assimilate, period. But we should. There can't be coexistence, and there can't be assimilation. There has to be... The Jews have to be given their own homeland where they can develop into a holy nation and a nation of priests and a light unto the nations. That's what the prophets demanded. That's what the Torah demands. That's what God demands. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And we go now to our great friend Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, Quran or Code of Hammurabi, which is more barbaric, unquote. Well, the Code of Hammurabi, you know, there are things in the Code of Hammurabi that are similar to what we have in the Torah. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. We have that in the Code of Hammurabi too. And Avraham lived around that time when the Code of Hammurabi was being developed. So there may have been an influence. And there's nothing, by the way, in the Torah, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing, if people come up with a code, an ethical code that is sensible and good, God will allow, God will enshrine that and make it holy. God does that for the Jewish people all the time. Jews are allowed to develop things and create things, and God accepts it. If it's in line with God's will, and if it's in line with making this a better world and what God's intentions are. But the difference between, the difference between an eye for an eye in the Code of Hammurabi as opposed to the Torah, in the Torah, you cannot follow even one out of the 613 commandments of the Torah unless you have the oral law. Just the written Torah, you would not know how to follow any of the 613 commandments. You must have the oral law in order to follow it. It is a complete mystery, all 613 commandments. There is no way to read the written Torah without the oral Torah. And in the oral Torah, we see an eye for an eye is not literally an eye for an eye. In other words, in the Code of Hammurabi, it was literal. If someone had an accident, and as a result of the accident, he accidentally caused his neighbor's eye to be poked out, or blinded his neighbor in his eye because of an accident. For whatever reason, there was an accident. They would go to the guy who accidentally did that and poke his eye out and actually literally blind him in his eye. That was the Code of Hammurabi, so it was very cruel. If someone accidentally knocked someone's tooth out, accidentally, they would knock the guy who did it would have his tooth knocked out. I mean, this is the way the Code of Hammurabi operated. In Judaism, it doesn't work that way. In Judaism, if you accidentally, and again, I'm emphasizing it's Bishkaga, which means not intentional, accidentally. If you do it intentionally, if you deliberately, viciously poke someone's eye out, that's a different story. Then you do deserve to get an eye for an eye. But if you do it accidentally, let's say, in the Code of Hammurabi, you'd get, that's it, that's what it says, that's the law, that's it. But in Judaism, that's not the way it works. In Judaism, you pay compensation for the loss of that person's vision in the eye. You figure out for the rest of his life how much that would be worth, and you pay him compensation. The person who did it would pay him compensation. And the same thing for an eye, for a tooth, or for whatever else. If it's done bishkaga, if it's not done bezadon. Bezadon means intentionally, with evil intent. Bishkaga means it was unintentional. So Judaism took those laws that were the accepted laws of the time, adopted some of them, but change them with God's rules, God's more compassionate rules. That's the difference. As far as the Quran and the Code of Hammurabi, which is more barbaric, which is the question of Smash Islam, of course, the Quran, nothing is more barbaric than the Quran. You can't get more barbaric than the Quran. I mean, this is a book that justifies rape and mass murder and genocide and the worst crimes on the face of the earth. I mean, it's just, it's a book It's the one, this is the one religion that Adolf Hitler and the Nazis loved. Adolf Hitler and the Nazis, they also liked the pre-Christian German pagan religions, but in terms of modern religions that are still, that still exist, in an appreciable, substantial way, Islam is the one religion that really still exists in a widespread way that Hitler and the Nazis loved Islam. They spoke about, oh, what a shame that the Muslims weren't able to conquer Europe and impose this on all of us. Then we could all be jihadist warriors. It would have been wonderful. Because the Quran, the Nazis loved the Quran because the Quran was just as cruel as the Nazis. Winston Churchill said that the Quran is the Mein Kampf of war, is the, you know, Mein Kampf being Hitler's autobiography. Winston Churchill compared the Quran to Hitler and to the Nazis. And it really is, it's as bloody and barbaric as Hitler and the Nazis. So nothing beats the Quran when it comes to barbarism. Smash Islam now writes, compare Muslims to Babylonians, their traditions, culture, civilization, relationship to Jews, unquote. Well, the ancient Babylonians were very barbaric, cruel, vicious people. They slaughtered huge numbers of Jews. They used to take Jewish babies and smash their heads against stones and rocks. I mean, they were viciously barbaric people. They slaughtered huge numbers of Jews and huge numbers of other people. They destroyed, of course, the first temple, Beit HaMikdash HaRishon, the first temple they destroyed. So the Babylonians were very, very cruel and evil people. Compare them, I don't know. I mean, the difference is that the Babylonians, I guess, I don't know, the Babylonians, of course, were idolaters, and they permitted other people to engage in their own types of idolatry. But there, you know, as far as cruelty, there are some comparable aspects, except that Islam, when Islam takes over, Islam demands that everyone become a Muslim. And if you don't become a Muslim, you have to be slaughtered. Once Islam takes over the world and they believe in world conquest, everybody has to become a Muslim. There is no place in Islam for non-Muslims. They're supposed to be, they could live in servitude until the Muslims conquer the whole world. They could live in servitude, but eventually when the Muslims conquer the whole world, everyone must become a Muslim or die. And until then, either you're going to be a slave to Islam and submit to Islam as a slave and live in servitude, or you're going to convert or you're going to be killed. That's Islamic law. So you can't get worse than that. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we go now to the great paper cut, who writes, and I quote, Lena Dunham has been caught lying about the Republican rapist, quote unquote. I knew she was lying the first time I heard this. She is now being sued, unquote. Oh, yeah. I mean, she is, I don't know if all of our members are familiar with this. Lena Dunham is she has a Jewish mother. Her father wasn't Jewish, but her mother was Jewish. So under Jewish law, she's Jewish, of course, self-hating Jew, of course. She appeared in Barack Hussein Obama's re-election ads. She appeared in one re-election ad, especially that we actually did a video on it. She appeared in one re-election ad where she compared voting for the first time to having sex for the first time. She's telling young people to vote, and she's saying if you vote for the first time, it's like having sex for the first time. I mean, just a nasty, dirty ad. And it was part of the Obama re-election campaign. Anyway, she's a disgusting, evil person. Her whole life is evil. Everything about her is evil. And hopefully she loses the lawsuit big time. I hope they bankrupt her. She's a despicable liar. And you know, she just made up this lie about this guy being a rapist. Complete lie. Thank you, Papercut. And we go now to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, what is your opinion on, one, Wall Street Journal columnist Brett Stevens, unquote. Brett Stevens is an assimilated, self-hating Jew. He was the editor of the Jerusalem Post for 2 years. When he ran that newspaper, it was a leftist rag. He's just pathetic. He's a pathetic, wimpy, self-hating, assimilated Jew. You know, what else can I say? I mean, that's what he is, and that's what he represents, and that's why he's part of the establishment, and that's why they give him a column on at the Wall Street Journal, which is a symbol of the establishment. EB22 writes, two, Ashton Carter is the next defense secretary nominee, unquote. I don't know enough yet. I don't think we know enough yet about him. Of course, anybody that Barack Hussein Obama nominates, we have a very justifiable belief that automatically this guy is going to be terrible. And it's very justified. But in this particular case, they claim that he's secretly pro-Israel and that he's secretly against Iran and that he secretly pushes for tougher action against Iran. That's what they claim. You know, I'm skeptical about it because I don't think Obama nominates people like that. But anyway, we'll see. When we see, we'll see. We'll see. We don't know enough yet about him. Obviously, the fact that he's part of Obama's administration and being nominated by Obama is a very, very bad sign. Now we go to the great Ephraim Ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, could you talk a little about the past parasha and haftarah? Thank you, unquote. Well, the parasha we discussed with I think it was Tag Mechir who asked me about the parasha. I'm pretty sure. Let me just make sure here. Yes, Tag Mechir asked me about the parasha, but the haftarah for this week's parasha is about Esav, is about Esau and the punishment that he's going to get for going against Israel and for the terrible things he wants to do to Israel and that he's done to Israel, because the descendants of Esau, of Esav, did terrible things to the Jewish people for 2,000 years, for thousands of years. And so the parasha basically says, I mean, the haftarah basically says, and it's in the prophet Ovadia. It's from the prophet Ovadia. And the parasha and the prophet Ovadia essentially says that he's going to be cut off and destroyed, that all those with him that did things against Israel, because of the things they did against Israel, are going to be destroyed. They're going to be cut off and destroyed. It's Perek Aleph, by the way, Parasha Ovadia, and it continues until Perek Yud Aleph, for those who, that which means chapter 1 in Ovadia, and it continues until chapter 11 in the book of for the prophet Ovadia in the Bible. That's the haftarah this week. Thank you, Ephraim, and I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.